I'd like to call a meeting of the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today's date is Wednesday, March 15th. We have before us the minutes from March 14th. Representative Ugram, would you move the minutes, please?
Mr. Chair, I move those minutes.
Thank you. All those in favor of the minutes as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you. Members, we have House File 2212 before us. The intention of the chair is to lay this bill over, so I'll move that 2212 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Peterson, I'll also move your A17 amendment at this time. So members, the A17 is before us. All those in favor of the A17 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. So we have the bill in the shape that the author would like. Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2212 is a bill that relates to the freeway landfill, which is located south of the Minnesota River and west of Interstate 35W next to the Kramer Quarry in Burnsville. It accepted waste from 1960 to 1990. There has been remedial investigation, environmental studies, and monitoring devices that have been installed in the landfill. And to our knowledge, the landfill does not pose an immediate environmental risk. However, when the quarry quits mining, which potentially could be 20 years, it could be less, depending on what development brings, water levels will rise and jeopardize the integrity of the water for Burnsville. And that's why it is listed as a top environmental concern, especially being located right next to the Minnesota River. The location is also prime for redevelopment, which has been, there has been interest from outside parties to buy the land. However, until the environmental issues can be addressed through the regulatory agencies, this land will be too costly and too difficult to redevelop any portion of the 200 acres. So currently there is a transfer station being operated by the owner, and that will be used by multiple garbage haulers in the metro area, and it is not on the landfill. But it is part of the project. So the cost to remediate the freeway landfill is $64 million, or it's at least budgeted at that, and there is approximately $30 million left in the closed land investment plan. And so I just want to make a note that this legislation is intended to be referenced with that money. So in a perfect world, the owner would like to be compensated for selling the land, the MPCA would like to remediate the landfill, and the city would like to retain some acreage for redevelopment and possible right-of-way for the proposed Cliff Road interchange and the 35W bridge replacement. So for now, we're just focusing on dealing with all the responsible parties, because this project has been moved into the Superfund process, and what we're trying to do is mitigate the litigation so that the state of Minnesota would be the responsible party, because it affects so many different people. I don't know what you have in your packets today, members, but there are 57 members that have constituents that are affected by this process. And so it's in the best interest of the state and its citizens to the state to take the responsibility. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think we should move to the testifiers.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Larson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Peter Larson. I'm from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. We have a couple roles that we're playing on this law, on this landfill. We have about a dozen folks that we're helping respond to an EPA letter that we'll talk about in a little bit. And I am also here on behalf of several of the PRPs, potentially responsible parties. You'll hear that term a lot probably, because I'd rather just say it that way. The PRPs that are interested in supporting Representative Peterson's bill. I'm going to just show you from the perspective of a private party how this has happened since the early 90s. I'll add a little personal story along the way when I can. In 1993, I had what was essentially Kirk's job as an assistant commissioner at the PCA working for Ernie Carlson, was the assistant commissioner that helped pass the Closed Landfill Act. So I can maybe bring a little bit of that perspective as well. In fact, I don't know what you were doing in March of 1994, but I think I was sitting at this table working on the Closed Landfill Act. I provided several pieces of documents, several documents for you. And the first one's dated June 22nd. It's a request for information regarding the sanitary landfill site. So these are all letters from one company. So I'm just going to describe to you how this has worked for one company. So in 1993, this letter, "Dear Sir, Madam, request for information regarding Freeway Sanitary Landfill Site," was sent to a whole bunch of parties, many of whom are going to be on the list I'll talk to you about later. So 24 years ago, companies got this letter saying, "We need information. We've identified you as a potentially responsible party, and we want information from you. And if you want to, you can look, and there's a 14-item questionnaire on the back that includes all sorts of information. Identify products and services you've produced, identify all the waste you've produced, names and addresses and telephone numbers of current and former owners," things like that. So that was 1993. Now, at the same time, I'll talk a little bit about why this act exists. That was June 1993. I found this August 1993 hearing. Congressman Ramstead was on the Small Business Committee at the time. This was a hot issue back in the early 90s. How landfills were being cleaned up. So there's information in here on Freeway Landfill. This is a congressional a record of a hearing. It says EPA added the site to the national priority list. That's the Superfund list in September 1985. So what's that, 32 years ago? And one of the quotes in here, "The owner of the site has made it clear he will not pay all costs of cleanups or contribution litigation between the owner and a number of parties can be expected when EPA and PCA decide to move forward with the remedy." So that's 1993 that was described. This describes several lawsuits that have happened, which I won't go through. But here's how this landfill was described in the congressional hearing. And I could just tell you from my experience what might happen, but this is actually accurate today, but it was said in a congressional hearing in 1993. "There are several possible situations that could result from PCAs looking at PRPs to fund the cleanup." And again, this is specific to the Freeway Landfill. "First, the PCA tries to force McGowan to perform the cleanup. He will probably sue the other PRPs to contribute to the cost of remediation. If the PCA targets other PRPs for the cleanup, it's likely that they will try to spread the cleanup cost to as many parties as possible. Finally, the PCA may elect to conduct the cleanup itself and then sue to recover costs later from the PRPs. No matter which scenario plays out, the potential for protracted negotiations and litigation are high at the landfill." So that's 1993. And then just a note, we should know that Freeway Landfill is actually early in the process compared to the way several landfills were being dealt with at that time. So the East Bethel Landfill was also described at that time. Here's what was going on then. "The operator of the landfill has sued more than 100 parties to spread the costs of cleanup. In addition, the operator has sued 6 insurance carriers for reimbursement of cleanup and defense costs." So Freeway Landfill will be where East Bethel was in 4 or 5 years. And that's all 1993 congressional testimony. It's as accurate today as it was then. Then there's another letter that I have here for you. It's a 1995 letter. And what happened between the 1993 letter and the 1995 letter is the Closed Landfill Act passed. Closed Landfill Act was funded by bond money, insurance recovery proceeds that were expected, and solid waste fees. So this is the 1995 letter. You see the difference. This letter is about insurance coverage related to the Freeway Sanitary Landfill. The Closed Landfill Program gave the state the right to stand in the shoes of insureds. The state was assigned the insurance coverage. What this letter is a letter to the PRP saying, "Give us all the information you have on your insurance coverage." So there's people in this room who answered this question in 1995 and gave PCA information on their insurance policies. The state hired a law firm, litigated with these insurance companies, recovered $100 million. That's part of the money that's in the Closed Landfill Program right now. Another attorney and I have been looking into this last couple weeks. Again, this all started in February. and we exchanged emails last night and this morning. He's found one of these insurance settlement documents. The insurance settlement document that he found specifically states that insurance coverage for freeway landfill has been settled. So we want to get more of these documents, but the one that he found said that the insurance companies that signed that settlement with the state specifically settled their liability for the freeway landfill. Now, I still need to get that document. I'll correct it if you know, this all happened last night, this morning. It's consistent with a PCA report on the closed landfill program where they said that they entered into global settlements for all landfills qualified to be in the program. That includes the freeway landfill. So at least what we've learned in the last 24 hours is the people on the PRP list that you're going to see later, the state has already taken their insurance policies and settled with the insurance companies, so there's no coverage left based on what happened. Now, that's all fine because that's the way the program was designed. I remember being involved with the Attorney General's office and PCA staff, and I scoffed at them. I thought, well, fine, we'll do that, but we're going to get enough solid waste tax money, and we're going to get enough bonding money to pay for this because I'm not comfortable assuming that we're going to get money from insurance companies. The state recovered, I think, something like $105 million and paid a third of it to the lawyers. So I think they got about 70 net and settled with insurance companies. So that's what this letter is. You can look at it if you want. It's got a lot of information. What's interesting, again, to today, it's they actually described, so you're a company that got this in 1995, and you get a letter that says, under the Act, once a landfill meets certain legal initial requirements, the commissioner will take over all future responsibility. So this basically describes, kind of don't worry, it doesn't say there might be a private owner down the road that won't be willing to enter into an agreement, and we're going to take your insurance policy, but you still might be subject to Superfund liability. It doesn't say that, but that's kind of what's happening now. So that's the insurance letter. And then I'll move forward to the letter that nobody wanted to get, February 10th. So February 10th, this one's dated. You can see it's from Watson Forsberg. I told them that I was going to use this, but you can go online and see the front page of every one of these for all the companies that got this letter. And I'll just jump ahead. You can go to enclosure one is the list of responsible parties. I think there's 186 of them on this list. So we got a bunch of calls Friday and Saturday. This arrived certified mail with most people Friday afternoon, and they had to sign it. And it was, I saw one of the envelopes. It's from the EPA, you know, had a really kind of stark message on the front. He had to sign for it. They opened it up, and we got five or six calls on a Friday afternoon after they opened the letter. So what this letter says is you've been identified as a potentially responsible party. That's a scary thing for a lot of companies. We can talk about that. So that's why we're here today. As of February 10th, 180 companies got this. So. And you can see in here on the very back, there's a questionnaire that asks things like supply all your financial records to clearly show the company's current financial position, provide a list of employees who had any knowledge of generation, transport, disposal of waste, identify and provide information on the chemicals and hazardous substances you transported to the site. So there's a whole lot of tough questions to answer. We've been sitting in a conference room with some folks going through these questions, and it's not a lot of fun for people to try to remember what happened pre-1990. So what's happening now, based on conversations I had with EPA, so there's about 186 companies that had this response due in 30 days from February 10th. Most people, I think, I know our clients got a 45-day extension, so their responses will be due in April. EPA will take all those responses. I would guess, based on our small sample size of those 186, there's probably a whole bunch that don't even exist anymore. They will take that and they will start sorting, and they will identify the big parties, either, frankly, just simply by size, but they should do it by waste generated and the type of waste they sent to the facility. They will start working through that this summer or fall. They will let people know what bucket you're in. Are you a company that they're going to pay a lot of attention to? Are you a company that's got no liability? Perhaps, I'm not sure how often they'll say that yet, or are you one of these smaller companies that we'd like to settle with? I asked the agency, or the PCA, or EPA, and they said, well, my estimate was you're going to do a remedial investigation feasibility study. That's the next step. I said, is it wrong for me to testify that it'll take a year and a half to do that? And they said, oh, no, that'll take 3 or 4 years. And then what happens is they'll do that remediation investigation feasibility study, and they'll define what needs to be done at the site. Then they will order the remaining 50 or 60 companies, let's just say, that's just a guess, to do this work. Now, actually, this fall, they'll order companies to do the study, which will probably cost $1.5 million, I think more, but that's what I've heard. That will probably happen this fall. So the EPA will find people and issue an order saying somebody has to do this, and if somebody doesn't, federal judges tend to back up EPA on this. And probably in 4 or 5 years, there's going to be a magistrate that will say to the remaining 50 or 60 companies, there's a $65 million bill due. We have allocated the liability among you. Say there's 50 or 60 people. Let's say the owner, they say you're half responsible, but let's say that, I don't know how much an owner can come up with. Let's say it's $5 million. That seems like a lot to me. There's $60 million left, and there's 50 or 60 companies, and there's going to be an average $1 million obligation by those companies. So that's where we are, and I'll just conclude by saying, when I was at the agency, we had a study that said for every dollar that was spent on Superfund activity at landfills, 50 cents went to transaction costs. And this list of 186 facilities is why the legislature passed the bill. What this bill does is just say one person, and I'm not going to say anything bad about that person, it's just true. If that one person doesn't sign a document, these 186 people don't get the benefit of the closed landfill program, even though I think the state took their insurance money, even though they've been paying for those general obligation bonds, and even though they've been paying solid waste taxes since that tax went into place in 1993. So we appreciate Representative Peterson bringing this up. There's some people in the crowd, I know they care about this a lot. I'm happy to answer questions. I know some companies are going to come up and talk a little bit. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
So we haven't talked about the owner of the landfill who had an opportunity for 20 years to get into the closed landfill program and decided not to. And so it was the owner of the landfill that decided that they would rather, because PCA said if you don't get into the closed landfill program, gave them many, 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 many opportunities. He said, I would rather go and be in the federal Superfund. So that landfill has made that choice to go through the federal Superfund process. You're coming here and asking us something I don't think we can give you. We are not federal government. Or maybe we can give you something that we can give to everybody in the Superfund sites, and I would certainly like to know from PCA how many federal Superfund sites are out there and how they are being paid for. But anyway, 20 years, and as far as I know, the owner still does not want to sell his landfill, did not want to get into the super closed landfill. So the owner had an opportunity, declined. I'm not getting why you're here.
Is there a question there, Representative Wagenius? I'm sorry.
There is a question. The owner had an opportunity to get into the closed landfill program, did not. The owner chose to, because PCA told him it was going to happen, to go into the federal Superfund process. That's where they are now. This is not state Superfund. This is federal Superfund. So this is a federal problem right now with a local landowner who does not want the state involved. Doesn't want the state involved. Just wants the federal government involved. So I don't understand how the state can be involved right now, because the state has no jurisdiction over this landfill. None. There's a big jurisdictional question that I hope you would address.
Mr. Peterson or Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. Again, it's just a couple responses to that. We have talked with folks about the idea of the state indemnifying parties. It doesn't affect federal law. You can't, you're right, affect federal law. We've consistently gotten the answer that the state could do this. Now, we've consistently got the answer as well that we need to work a little bit through how exactly it would work and what an indemnification agreement would look like, but we've not had a single person say the state can't do this. And you know, this act was passed in 93 to only cover landfills for a very clear reason, and Superfund sites since then have not been subject to state assistance. Just as a couple of examples of why that makes sense, there's a small business structure in place to allow folks to work through Superfund sites. There, often there'd be a Superfund site with one party that owned the property, ran the business, did what, legal or not, the work that caused the contamination. And then you'd have a bunch of small parties that maybe brought things in. So the Superfund program, and it was part of, the, I think, the result of that congressional hearing that I described, has something called the Nicomis parties. And I hate the word because government makes up words, and they made up the Nicomis because they already were using de minimis. So if you have less than 100 gallons of liquids or less than 200 pounds of solid materials, they decided that for small businesses you shouldn't have Superfund liability. That's great, except nobody just bought 200 pounds or less of stuff to this landfill, probably. It doesn't take much to have 200 pounds of solid waste. So for this site, that the Nicomis option is probably just not available. So the next one is de minimis. So that's generally less than 1% of the waste, or 1%. Again, that would be a small part of the site. Well, you're going to have a whole bunch of parties here that probably didn't bring up 1%. But 1% here is of $65 million is $650,000. A tenth of that is $65,000. So I'd say that there's a whole lot of people in this room who know that this act was passed specifically for them. Actually, specifically for this landfill. This landfill was a subject that was looked at the time this act was passed. And a whole lot of those people think that the state should do this.
Representative Wilkin, yes?
Thank you.
Yep.
It was passed with the notion that a landfill could voluntarily enter into this, because there was no condemnation language in the landfill bill. The state was not authorized to condemn a landfill, which is what you're suggesting could have happened. But that wasn't in the law. It was a voluntary law. So one of the things that, if what you're suggesting here with indemnification is to tell taxpayers, rather than the people who put the garbage in, tell taxpayers that they have a $64 million bill that they want to pay. I mean, the fiscal note for this bill is $64 million. I mean, you've already said that. So the question is, why should my taxpayers, and why should Representative Luke's taxpayers, and why should Representative Uglum's taxpayers pay people who put garbage in this landfill? Why should that happen?
First, Representative Wagenius, the fiscal note has been requested, so we don't have, just to be clear for the record, we don't have the fiscal note, but we do have some estimates that people have kicked around.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say that state taxpayers have paid for 108 landfills to this point, including the people on this list. You have a constituent in your district that's going to be paying if this isn't passed. The city of Richfield, city of Richfield Public Schools, Edina Public Schools, city of Burnsville, who we're going to hear from, I guess my response is 108 landfills have been cleaned up with state tax dollars because of this program. The landfill isn't an entity that can make a decision. It's not the landfill that makes a decision. There's a person that makes a decision. We have one person, and I'm not going to say anything bad about him. One person has decided not to. 186 people would like to choose to be in, and they would voluntarily, happily agree. And like I said, the state has already taken their insurance policy, so they probably think that's fair.
Representative Wiggins.
Well, if you say that the insurance policy, there's some simple math here, that there was about $100 million that came from insurance policies. It was a bit over that. And a third of it went to the Washington, D.C. law firm that had to sue the insurance companies. So that was $600,000 per landfill. So if you just do it out. So, okay, you can say that perhaps, maybe, I don't know, perhaps $600,000 has been paid for. But that's a long ways from $64 million. So I'm still going to ask the question. I may have one constituent that put trash into this landfill. Why are the rest of my constituents now going to have to pay that one constituent?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, my only response would be, under the law, if one person signs a document, that's what's going to happen. And this bill doesn't change that. All this bill changes is that one person doesn't get to decide.
In effect, I think you're saying we're going to condemn that landfill. I mean, that's what I am hearing the legal effect of this, is the state is going to be, in essence, condemning it, because in order to clean it up, so the guy who doesn't want to clean it up is not going to be cleaning it up. Somebody's got to clean it up. So we don't know if it's $64 million. That's an estimate. It could be $100 million. And then there is, once the folks who got into the landfill thing got in with the notion of also putting their insurance dollars in. We haven't heard anything about insurance dollars here. and that money then went into what you call the closed landfill program. That's for all the other landfills that have to be maintained for the next 100 years. So there is not free money here. That is for all the other landfills where the money has been set aside, and I think you remember that Representative Dennis Osment did that, to set aside that money to make sure we can maintain all those other landfills. So there's not a dollar sitting here for this landfill. It would be the responsibility of the rest of the taxpayers in the state.
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Larson. I wasn't here in 93 or 94, and you, of course, gave a very good history of this. But so you have to excuse me a little bit. But so the Landfill Cleanup Act of 93, in your testimony and your estimation, the insurance companies basically, for all these individuals, paid close to $100 million. And I'm assuming that most of these individuals then thought that the settlement was made. Is that correct?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, yes. I think that it happened so long ago that I even had to look and make sure that what I understood to be the case is the case that those insurance companies settled for all these landfills, including Freeway. But yeah, certainly that letter that I gave you would, if you got that, mm-hmm. you would have read that to say, I'm giving up my insurance policy, the state's taking over this landfill, I'm relieved.
Mr. Chair?
Mr.
Larson, so, I mean, really, in the eyes of a company or a school district or whatever, That's what insurance is for. They bought the insurance, and they felt that at that time then that their liability was ended.
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum. Yes, post-1985, you couldn't have bought an insurance policy that would have covered this. Pre-1985, which is the basis of the settlements, yes, you would have talked with your agent, and they would have talked with the company, and they would have said, whatever your policy limits are, you have coverage. And that's what the state took and settled.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Larson, well, then, how is it that the EPA, the federal EPA, is taking this action now? I guess, is there a lack of coordination with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency on this, or what is the situation?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kudelka, excuse me, too. Mr. Kudelka, you may be on deck here.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything bad about either the PCA or the landfill owner here, because this was a good program, and they've been working hard on this. I think it just came to a point, from what I've heard, that they several times attempted to come to an agreement that would have allowed it to run a state program. It didn't. It's a state Superfund site. EPA is pretty cold-blooded about this. They have a Superfund site. They got a law. They're going to find people to pay for it. They're going to order them to clean it up. And that's where it's gotten. I don't think it's from a lack of coordination. It's just where we are.
Commissioner Kudelka, do you have anything to add to that? Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Can you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk.
26 years from now, we'll know who you are.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And just to make sure I've got the question, it was, why does EPA not...
Would you repeat the question, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kudelka, yeah, the question is basically... okay, so the 1993 Landfill Cleanup Act occurred, the insurance money changed hands, $100 million. My question is, why is the EPA taking action now, and what kind of coordination have you had with them, and why are we still going after the property owners?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, so we have been working with EPA on its information on the landfill. Let me back up a little bit. The closed landfill program only works because EPA allows it to work, and it represents that in the statute 2, where it specifically states it needs a concurrent determination by EPA to allow it to work. And how this is played out on 109 landfills is MPCA and EPA have come to an agreement. EPA said if PCA takes care and cleans up a property and meets our requirements, they will allow the closed landfill program to meet the needs of Superfund. However, in this case, EPA has noticed the state and said that there has been no action on this. If you cannot come to a resolution, we will take action on it. As a result, EPA and federal law trumps any state law, and they are going through the federal process, which is to go after the potential responsible parties, the PRPs, which include 180 some that they sent out the letter to.
Mr. Duffel?
Yep. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kudelka. So there was $100 million that from the testimony here, that the state of Minnesota got from insurance companies and everything else, minus attorney's fees, of course. But why is it that there was no action taken after all of this time with MPCA?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, those settlements were global settlements for all the eligible sites, and those dollars were used to clean up many, many, many sites and in the Closed Landfill Investment Fund to help with the perpetual care of those sites. Specifically to Freeway Landfill, the entire program is based on the voluntary entry by the landfill owner. Without that, the agency cannot use the program. It is all set up for voluntary entry. The program was not anticipated that a landfill would not enter the program because folks all saw landfills as a liability and a negative cost to them. And so there was no reason for it to believe that a landfill wouldn't enter the program.
Okay. Representative, I may have some more questions later. Thank you.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, for the folks in the audience who are who received the letter, I can understand their frustration. It looks like some of them may have been children at the time that that first started. If I have a couple questions for Mr. Larson or Representative Peterson.
By the way, when Commissioner Kudelka came down, they both left. You're not toxic, are you? Yeah, well, we know that.
So,
okay, yep, Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, so if the House File 2212 as amended passes, will the landfill get cleaned up?
Representative Peterson or Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative, that would be the ultimate goal. I mean, we came close to getting a deal between the owner and MPCA as early as last year. However, that's been the challenge. So the goal would be to sell the land. The owner would sell the land to whomever, and the MPCA would clean it up, and the city of Burnsville would develop the land. This is a very unique property, so I just want to point that out. This is not something that we want to do in every single property, but this is a very unique situation. And that's why we're here, because really at this point, there's a lot of people that have now are involved with this process by, you know, just because they created garbage as early as 1960 and as late as 1990. And if you know, I don't know if you have the document that shows all the different parties that are involved in this settlement, but there's a lot of your names on the sheet of paper, and that's what our concern is we want the ultimate goal to clean up the property. We want to make sure that the owner is compensated for his land in some effect, because not all of it is on the landfill. But, you know, and I actually feel like we need to hear from the rest of the people who are here to testify before we continue our conversation. I think that would be helpful.
Yep, I agree.
Representative Hanson, Mr. Chair. So it can be a goal, Representative Peterson, but it's not guaranteed that if this passes, and I think everyone here has sympathy for the PRPs, and we all have constituents that are PRPs. But are we rewarding rewarding recalcitrants in terms of the operator not wanting to go into either the voluntary program, so then it goes into the clearly identified hard regulatory program? If we indemnify the PRPs, and still it doesn't get cleaned up, it's still the decision is with the owner. So then we're back where we are, where we have the potential cleanup costs still there. If he doesn't want to participate.
Representative Peterson or Mr. Larson.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I can't tell you how much this might speed up, this bill, cleanup, but I'll tell you that it would remove some claims by a lot of parties, so to the extent there's fewer claims, the legal process might move faster. And I don't think that this bill is going to affect a federal district court judge listening to EPA's orders and that judge making sure that people are on a schedule. So I think we just are where we are as long as this is in the Superfund process. It would go faster if it was in the closed landfill program. And I think it will go slightly faster if this bill passes, because you'll have fewer people that are inclined to participate in lawsuits and file their own claims, which I'm sure would happen.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that point, Mr. Larson, we generally You know, and I understand this is more through the Superfund process rather than through litigation, but we generally don't engage as the legislative branch when there's judicial activity occurring. And I understand this is more an executive administrative, federal executive administrative act, but are we engaging in stepping in the middle of the process here as it's going on with legislative action? Are we doing something we generally try not to do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, imagine me with no gray hair and no kids sitting here in the early 90s, and I'd be sitting here telling you we're doing this because there's so much litigation going on. That's why this happened, is there was so much litigation going on, and the state decided to stop it.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was actually for Commissioner Kudelka, but if we've got other testifiers, maybe it'll be answered in the process. So, as Representative Peterson said, maybe we can get to the other testifiers and see what happens.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you.
And then while that's happening, I'd like the Ms. Kautz, is it? From
Kautz,
I'm sorry. The mayor to come down?
Yes.
Proceed, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Representative Peterson, you talk about compensating the owner and letting the owner sell the land. So we are going to ask taxpayers to clean up the land so the owner who wanted to go through the Superfund process can sell his land and make a profit. Is that the outcome you're anticipating here?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. I'm not involved with the negotiations that are between the MPCA and the owner. I just know that he would like to move on. He would like to sell his land and be out of this process. And whatever that settlement is would need to be negotiated between those two parties.
Mr. Wagenius.
I think this is a huge piece of the puzzle. The owner has had that opportunity for 20 years to have his land go into the closed landfill program. But it is a voluntary program. And it appears from your testimony that he wants to keep the land, have us indemnify folks, in other words, we'll pay for the cleanup, and then he retains the land that we've cleaned up, and he gets to sell it at a profit. I mean, that's what I hear is part of the outcome here. And that probably doesn't feel very fair to the folks who would be asked to clean it up.
Thank you. Mayor Kautz, thank you for being here. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Fabian, members, thank you so much for allowing me to speak with you this morning. Elizabeth Kautz, Mayor of the City of Burnsville, 100 Civic Center Parkway. Members and Mr. Chair, I come to you to speak on our shared values. All of us, you and we in the City of Burnsville and others who are responsible parties, care about the environment. And we also care about clean water. The item that is before you is a landfill that sits on top of the Prairie du Chien Jordan Aquifer. This is water that all of us draw from. And it is something that we as Minnesotans are proud of, that we have this wonderful, rich resource within our asset base. So we ask you for your help. We have a landfill that sits on top of it. It also is adjacent to the Minnesota Wildlife Refuge. These are all great assets for the state of Minnesota and for all of us. We need to be proud of that. And we need to make sure that we all, as citizens of this great state, value the environment. And I know you do. And we also value our water. Others are very, very jealous of the water that we have here in Minnesota. So I come before you to speak on behalf of those who are responsible parties, who are not landfill operators or owners or haulers. I'm here on behalf of the citizens of not only Burnsville and those who are responsible parties and the businesses, but for the school districts and the municipalities. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have here are citizens. Minnesota, there are no boundaries. We move in and out of cities and school districts. So it does affect us, Representative Wagenius. It affects all of us. But what's more important is the environment. What's more important is the water. And we need to be mindful of that. We need to make sure that this landfill is closed properly. I've been the mayor for over 22 years, and I've been working on this ever since then. I've worked with the EPA administrator and others on this issue. Because why? Because our children and our grandchildren deserve to have clean water, deserve to be enjoying an environment that is pristine. So I ask for your help. And I also ask that it is closed properly. So I know that there are many questions that you have, but let's move through the process. It's been over 20 years that the MPCA has tried to close this properly, but it is in conjunction with the EPA and the laws of our country. So please help us. Help those people who have already paid. Help those businesses who may not have been may not have been in business at the time, but are now going to be paying. I ask you for your compassion and for your care. And I ask you for the rest of the people of Minnesota and for those who are coming after us to have clean water and to have a pristine environment. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Questions? Okay. Seeing none. Rick Ogara, did I pronounce that correctly? If you stick around, Madam Mayor, you may have some questions later. Thank you.
I'm happy to do that.
I know you are. I can tell.
It's important.
And then after that, we'll have Commissioner Kudelka, you come back down and do your testimony, and then Mark Morawski, I think it is. So, Mr. Ogara, I'm hoping I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Rick Ogara, I'm the CEO and owner of Carl Bolander & Sons Company, a long-time company in Minnesota, 1924. We're not a garbage hauler. We build site development, earthwork, building, demolition. We've had our own landfills in the past. We never hauled any waste landfill or demolition waste to the freeway landfill. We did the only waste that we ever hauled to the landfill was some hay from the state fair. We used to have the contract for the state fair, so every year when they clean it up, we'd haul the hay down to the landfill. And so we're sitting here as a company in good standing in the city and the state here, haul some hay to the landfill, and because the landfill owner doesn't want to settle with the PCA and enter into the closed landfill fund to get this landfill cleaned up, you know, I have a potential financial obligation of $1 million or $2 million that I might have to pay for hauling hay for the state fair. It's just this bill, this amendment to this bill seems to take it out of the hands a little bit from just the owner of the landfill and let some of the PRPs have a say in the landfill, the closed landfill program. We've all paid in as taxpayers. They got $100 million from the insurance companies, but everyone here in this room pays fees on their solid waste to go into that closed landfill fund every day. So we're all paying for that, and we're going to continue to pay for that. But why not use it? It was to protect us people, to protect everybody from multiple lawsuits. My only thing, recourse will be to go to sue the state fair. It was their waste. It wasn't mine. I just hauled it for them. So this seems to clear this up. This really helps the PRPs, and I'm sure the landfill will inherently be closed with this money. I'm sure hoping that. That's really all I have to say. This is for the PRPs.
Thank you, Mr. O'Gara. Appreciate your being here. Commissioner Kadelka, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The closed landfill program was created expecting landfill owners would voluntarily enter the program and to relieve them and the non-owner operators of their cleanup responsibilities, and it's worked in 109 cases so far with no problems. The bill doesn't address the larger issue ensuring long-term risk and cleanup of freeway landfills taken care of. It deals with a subset of the overall process. It only covers what are the future responsibilities of non-owners and operators. So it still has to follow through the track of federal Superfund to ensure something's clean. It's also unclear whether or not the bill would indemnify the owners and operators since federal law supersedes state law. We've talked a little bit about how that works just with the closed landfill program as it is in current law, so that's one of the questions we still have. It's a number of them that we needs to be resolved, questions and concerns, before we can be comfortable with the bill or form a position on it. Some of those include, how is EPA going to look at this? What would the roles of the non-operators and owners be? Will they still need to provide information to help out the process? Would they be in the remedy selection? Or would it just be up to the state and the owner-operator of a facility to take care of, to work this all out? Would EPA actually cover non-cleanup expenses, or would the state be able to? Under the definitions here, legal and administrative costs are not included under the terms environmental response costs. So those would still fall on the non-owner operators unless EPA defined it in a different way. That's a concern or a question we have with the amendment. I also need to clarify that if the owner-operator decides to sue non-owner operators and those legal costs, are those costs that the state now is on the hook to pick up, or if those are costs that are still incurred by those parties? The closed landfill program was created to get out of this whole legal administrative network that Mr. Larson was talking about. This bill, it's unclear how it puts us back into it or doesn't put us back into that process, and so we have questions before then. There's also questions about the funding source for it. It's mentioned the remediation fund. The remediation fund does not have the dollars available to clean up this site. Historically, the agency has come to the legislature for bonding dollars for large landfills. For instance, WDE, which is currently on the request for the governor's budget, and others in the past, including Flying Cloud, Woodbury, and others. We have a question now, since this would, the cost the state would be incurring would be indemnifying non-owner operators. Does that meet the terms of what is a public use for bonding dollars? Does this jeopardize the bond use of bond dollars for it? Another question that we're trying to sort out with MMB. And if bond dollars are used, would EPA allow for it? Bond dollars have strings attached. They cannot be used for a private purpose for 37 and a half years. Is that something the owner-operator would agree to? Would EPA agree to? And then it also needs to be clear that there's only one standard version of any binding agreement for non-owners and operators. The cost to the agency alone of trying to work out different agreements for 180-plus potential responsible parties would take away from other activities at the other 109 landfills that we're working on. So we are in the process of trying to get these answers. A lot of them are from entities not here, mostly EPA. And as we continue to move through this process, we will talk to the author and share what we learn.
Thank you. Commissioner Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kadelka. I guess what's frustrating to me in this whole scenario is that, you know, we have the owner and the operator of the landfill who, you know, I assume profited handsomely over 30 years here and would, again, profit from selling the land, did not enter into this voluntary program. And I'm wondering whether you could go through the chronology of your conversations and discussions with the landfill owner, because it seems to me if we were able to, you know, have that piece solved, we could, you know, begin to, you know, resolve this larger question. Because, you know, the Superfund program, after all, is a polluter pay initiative, not a taxpayer pay initiative. So maybe if you could run through the reasons and maybe that the operator didn't enter into these this voluntary agreement in your conversations over the years, I think that would be very helpful.
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for a quick history, the agency has been working at this for a number of times. In early 2000, a group of investors proposed an amphitheater to be built on the western part of the property, and there was the belief there that the final agreement would be signed. That fell through. In 2006 and 2008, agreement was close to being signed until cost estimates increased, and it was noted that the landfill owner-operator would be asked to cover part of those costs through environmental lien. And then most recently, the city, county, and state have worked for 3 years to find another remedy to come into the closed landfill program. Why that ultimately failed and why the owner-operator decided not to enter, I will not speak for them. I think they could express their concerns. It was unfortunate. It does put us into the federal Superfund process, and it didn't have to be this way.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just think that's an important piece of the puzzle that we're not getting some answers to, and I'm extremely concerned and frustrated by that.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, in looking at some of the stuff that has gone on reading up on this, and what you just said now, that the cost increased and the increased cost was going to be laid on the landowner, I can understand why when you're in an agreement and you come and you're getting close to an agreement, and all of a sudden you get laid on with another increased cost, why you'd back out of that deal. That sounds reasonable to me. But in the negotiations, then, apparently the landowner was concerned about the fact that in this deal, he wouldn't be able to continue to operate his existing transfer station. And so I'd like the answer to that. I mean, was that in there? And then also, it sounds like a pretty big piece of land. Now, in the agreement, was he going to be able to retain the land, or was the land going to be taken at a cost that he wouldn't agree to?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, two questions. I'll start with the ownership piece overall. The program does not require the land to be turned over to the state. There are multiple instances where a local unit of government or private entity has not turned over the land to the state because it is a voluntary program. What is required is access and restrictions to ensure that the cleanup can be done and kept up. So whether or not the property is turned over to the state is entirely up to the landfill owner. In terms of the question of the transfer station, the transfer station itself sits on top of the landfill, including property that leads up to it, which would need to be dug up and put on a liner. What the state proposed is that entering into the program, the state would do the cleanup, would arrange for temporary roads, much like MnDOT does during road constructions to businesses, to allow continued operation of the transfer station. If it was found that there was trash underneath the actual buildings and that, there was information on how that would be handled to allow for the continued operation of the facility. The state made every effort to allow for that facility to continue operating, working with the city and the county on that. The agreement did state that where the line facility would be would go under state ownership, and that was a benefit to the landfill owner because they wouldn't be paying for property taxes on a piece of property that they had no ability to use and was something that was a closed landfill. We believe the state was very fair in its negotiations. The state has never, in any of the 109 landfills, and in the program itself, does not have that the state will pay to buy someone's polluted site to then clean it up. It is always a party can come in voluntarily to enter the program and keep ownership of land if they choose.
Representative Green. Okay. Thank you. Representative Borginius. And then Mr. Murlowski. Okay. You'll be next. Yep.
Thank you. For the Assistant Commissioner, Representative Hansen asked the fundamental question. If this bill passed, would the pollution problem be solved? I mean, we heard the plea from the mayor of Burnsville, and that is the fundamental issue here, is would that site be cleaned up and in what time frame, and how would that even be possible? I mean, if the owner does not believe it's polluted, and I understand that that's the owner's position, how would we even get, even if we put all this money on the table, when would the landfill be cleaned up? When would the water be protected?
Commissioner Kadalka. Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill only changed who pays the bill and how that's divvied up. It does not change at all the process of getting the landfill cleaned up. It would still come down to EPA being a regulator, so to speak, making decisions and working with those potential responsible parties or under this, potentially the state also, to come up with a solution to clean up the landfill and how those costs would be divvied up between, depending on who enters the under the bill, would still be on the hook for covering those costs.
Ms. Morgan, yes?
So there is no... So people could be guaranteed they wouldn't have to pay, because indemnification is a pretty strong word, but there is no guarantee that the state then would not have to mitigate pollution from that site if it was not cleaned up. Am I getting that correctly?
Commissioner.
Not quite sure I follow you, Representative. The EPA would be the one that would determine whether or not any plan for cleanup is protective of the environment and making sure it's cleaned up. They would be the ones that would, if the potential responsible parties, which the state may be stepping in for under this bill, can't come up to agreement, they could take action. That process doesn't change. It's just who pays. I'm sorry if I misunderstood the question.
Professor Morganis.
I mean, we could pay now, and because the owner is reluctant to have this property cleaned up, saying it's not polluted, we could go through a 10, 20-year process from EPA, because we have a lot of Superfund sites in, out in Minnesota, federal Superfund sites, that are not clean. So now the gravel pit closes, or the gravel person closes, and we've got a water pollution problem for Burnsville before the site gets cleaned up. And that's what I think I'm fundamentally worried about here, that you could pass this bill, and then we would still be on the hook for mitigating for Burnsville and their water system pollution because the site hasn't gotten cleaned up. Because this bill has no timeline for the site getting cleaned up. That's my, I mean, underlying it all, that's the big problem here.
Thank you. Next, we've got Mr. Murlowski, and I want to recognize the students from Burnsville who are here today. Just I heard coincidentally, but...
It wasn't planned.
It wasn't planned.
They came to support what we're here for.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. You do a great job.
So, my name is Anthony Murlowski. I am the yard facility maintenance manager at Bel Air Builders in New Brighton. We're a small to mid-sized family-run construction company. My father, Mark, asked me to come represent him. He's out of town on business. We don't remember using the freeway facility. If we did, it would have been for construction debris. We built houses back at that time. Siding, wood, et cetera, nothing. That wasn't legal to dump there. We don't think we're responsible for any contamination on the site. And if we're charged, we're going to have to defend ourselves. This is going to bring undue hardship upon us and others here in this room. And I'm here to ask you to please support Representative Peterson's bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Member questions? Next we have Ms. Erdmanis. I'm sorry if I was pronouncing that incorrectly. It usually took me 3 to 4 weeks to get my students' names pronounced correctly, too. So, yeah, I see Mountain Iron is in the state basketball tournament. Way to go there, Representative Metza. Good job.
Hello, my name is Ingrida Erdmanis. I am speaking on behalf of Buck Blacktop, which is a company in St. Paul. We also have been a longtime company. We're celebrating 50 years this year. We do civil and site engineering, general contracting, and paving. And similar to a lot of the parties, we were surprised to receive this EPA demand letter recently. We, back in the 1990s, as Mr. Peterson mentioned, we also were served with the Blaine site, troll-style letter, we'll call it, with exorbitant settlements for alleged participation in the landfill. And at that time, we felt that it was an extreme waste of contractor and state resources because, as he mentioned, about half probably went to lawyers' fees. Only half actually addressed the cleanup of the site. And since then, we understood that with the solid waste tax that Minnesota introduced and also with negotiating with insurance our insurance companies, that future issues could be addressed so there wouldn't be this horrendous overhead. At the moment, with this demand letter, we feel like we're guilty until we can prove ourselves innocent. We haven't done anything legal. As the previous speakers have mentioned, we brought waste lawfully, paid to have it brought to this site, if we did, in fact. Being a contractor, we weren't actually even the source of the waste that was taken to the landfill. And we feel that this law, the 94 law, could be amended to at least relieve the contractors and property owners that are included in the Superfund law. We feel like it really would be much more effective to limit this between the state of Minnesota and the landfill owner. If nothing else, it would only involve two sets of lawyers instead of hundreds. Just yesterday, we spoke to a fellow contractor who has already provided a response to the EPA letter. And in his situation, he probably has almost no liability. But he's already spent $7,000 in legal fees, not even considering his own employee and time and expense. So the current method that uses to address this landfill, it involves incredible amounts of resources that don't even go towards the cleanup, just to appease bureaucracy and legal fees. So we just feel that there's got to be a more sensible way, a more cost-effective way to deal with this type of a situation, this particular situation, and also future similar situations. And while this amendment for this bill might not solve the whole issue, we feel it's at least a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Ms. Conrad is asked to testify.
Hi.
Hi.
Christy Conrad.
Good morning.
My name is Christy Conrad, and my husband and I are fourth-generation family owners of a fourth-generation family-owned construction company here in Minneapolis. Our business is A.E. Conrad Company, and we were recently notified by the EPA that our company may be partially responsible for the cost of cleanup at this Burnsville site. We were astounded. We didn't know much about the landfill site and couldn't imagine why the U.S. EPA would be giving us notice and telling us we may be financially responsible for the cleanup efforts. As far as we know, we have never directly done any business with or used this landfill. We scrambled to talk to other businesses. We recognized on the list, called attorneys, and went to meetings. When I learned that there was proposed legislation being introduced today by Representative Peterson that may be an alternative, I knew right away I had to come to this meeting to support the bill. A.E. Conrad has been in business since 1927. We've worked on projects across the country and here in Minnesota, including the Mayo Clinic, Orchestra Hall, and the Swedish Institute. We are proud of our work and that our business continues to thrive in such a highly competitive industry. Many Minnesota construction companies have been forced out of business in the recession. Today, we are strong and competitive. In my opinion, there are several things wrong with this frightening federal EPA action. First, it's overly broad and burdensome, excuse me, burdensome on small businesses like us. We did not knowingly use this landfill, yet somehow we have been included in a broad sweep by the EPA threatening an unidentified financial burden on us at some future date. It feels like a threat. Second, there is more responsible alternative to using this Superfund process, as Representative Raza Peterson has proposed in her House file bill. We strongly feel that this is the most consistent with the intent of the Minnesota Clean Command Program, which was adopted in 1994, to allow the state to take responsibility for old municipal waste landfills. This is a state issue with a state remedy already in place, and the federal government should let the state do its work. Or is it possible there may be reasonable alternative state remedies that may relieve our businesses and other PRPs responsibility? Please, I ask you to explore. My company is in support of this bill, as introduced by Representative Peterson. I hope that you will take my comments and remember my visit here today in support of other small businesses. I appreciate your time and thank you for your work supporting us to succeed in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Conrad. I appreciate your testimony. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had a question for the testifier.
Oh, Ms. Conrad.
Ms. Conrad. Okay. So, first off, thank you for the work you do for Minnesota and being a good small business. My question is if you, I mean, I think our questions that we're having are, even if we do the bill, will it still get cleaned up? And that our concern is, you know, this is a long time, it's 20 plus years, 30 years of this going on, and I think the EPA is doing their job as they were, and what we're actually, as Minnesota being, we tried to be creative almost 30 years ago and to provide an alternative, a voluntary program. But the challenge with the voluntary program is we have somebody who doesn't want to volunteer. So then it had to go to the hammer. So I'm maybe for you and for other small businesses, do you understand where we're coming from with this question of do we actually get this cleaned up? How do we actually get this cleaned up if we provide the indemnification?
Ms. Conrad.
Is there a question? I'm sorry.
I'm not sure. Mr. Chair, and Ms. Conrad, I was asking if you understand what we're saying. How do we actually get, you know, that's the end point that we're looking for here is how do we get this cleaned up?
Absolutely, and I do understand your question, for sure.
Thank you.
The problem for us is that we don't understand why we're involved. So we do see the problem, and we understand your dilemma, but we don't understand why we are involved.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I actually had a question for Mr. Kadelka. I don't know if we're done with the broader testimony.
Do you want us to be?
That's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, come back down, please. I'll do anything for Representative Hornstein within reason.
It's a very quick question.
And this is close to being.
Yeah, it's a very quick question, but I think hopefully an important one.
Yeah.
Mr. Kadelka, could you review how many participants there have been in the closed landfill program voluntarily that you've worked with landfill owners, and how many are there in addition to Freeway that have not participated?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Adalka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. There are 113 eligible sites. 109 have come in to the program signing the voluntary binding agreement. One of them is in the process of doing so. They are just made eligible a few years ago by the legislature. And there is legislation before us right now of another entity looking to come into the closed landfill program and enter it voluntarily. So that leaves three that have not to this point. The other two that are not Freeway landfill are much smaller, a few acre size landfills. And then those are ones that we have just prioritized other projects at this point because of risk. The program must create a priority risk ranking, and we are focusing on those on the high end of that risk ranking before those on the lower end, and that's where Freeway sits as one of the top two sites.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is important because we're really dealing with essentially one very recalcitrant operator here, and that's my concern. And I hope that there's some way to get them into this program, because that's ultimately, I hope and trust, the way that we'll get to our shared goal, which is to clean this site up once and for all.
Commissioner Kadelka, if the EPA can force a cleanup, can the state reject that? I mean, where are we at?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the federal government has the ability to say whether or not a cleanup is adequate. During that process, they consult with the state through the process, but at the end of the day, to meet federal Superfund requirements, they have to meet the federal approval. Many sites are both state and federally listed Superfund sites, such as this one, so it would also have to meet the state's requirements to ensure it's cleaned up. And that's all across the nation set up that way.
And the follow-up question then becomes, can the state force a cleanup?
Mr. Chair and committee members, under the closed landfill program, no. It's a voluntary effort of coming into the program. Under Superfund, if federal government is the lead on this, and they would be the ones to move forward on whether or not the timeline is moving to their interest.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will not ask a question, but I need to make a statement here following up some of the testimony from the contractors that were here. There's a couple different kinds of contractors. I've been in the construction industry for almost 40 years, in and out of these dumpsters that are going into these landfills. And nine times out of ten, in the olden days, we didn't even know what we were handling, you know. And sometimes that's still the truth here. We've got professional licensed builders that do some good work and educate themselves on the materials that they're handling all the time. I didn't hear from either of the contractors that were testifying today about any training programs, educating themselves on handling materials that go into these landfills. You know, there might be resins, there might be glues or plastics, all kinds of things that are going to contaminate one river or another. And we just didn't hear anything on any proactive education components for their workers, and taking responsibility, even the haulers. You know, the haulers that are picking up this construction debris, do they even look at the garbage? You know, is there something in there that shouldn't be going in there? So before contractors come here and, you know, tell everybody that they're doing good and they don't want to be held responsible, I see nothing that they've done to proactively take themselves off the hook and prove themselves that they're responsible contractors or responsible haulers. So be part of my message to them is be part of the solution rather than show up and complain about being picked on afterward. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Not sure I agree with that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Well, I mean, you know, the rules have changed significantly since 1960, and this landfill was not, there's nothing been added since after 1990. So this is going back several decades ago, and so I just find it that what we're doing now is something that happened in previous generations. Now we're holding these small businesses accountable, and that is really what the crux of this bill is about. It's about just saying, you know what, things happened before, let's look to the future instead of looking in the past and try to help people that have been testifying here today. That's what this bill is about. It's not going to solve all the world's problems. It's not going to solve everything, but it will help these people who have been put in this situation out of no fault of their own, is the way I look at it. Just because they hauled hay from the state fair to the landfill doesn't mean that they should have to come up with $64,000. I mean, that's really what these people are facing. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Johnson B. Mr. Chair, I've been sitting here
listening to what's been stated today, that one thing comes to mind. The people on this list that we have here, there's close to 160, I think it is. The insurance companies have already paid for this bill. They paid for the cleanup. They have, some of them, apparently, what we heard today, they have letters from the insurance companies and was sent out that it's been taken care of. Unfortunately, in 1994, the bill dealing with this might have been not drafted correctly. Because the owners, even though the companies that put stuff in there for the owners to take, maintain, and do properly, can back out of it and make these same companies pay again. Now, because the insurance companies have already been paid out, they're not going to pay again. Now it's going after the companies themselves, shutting them. Some of them is going to shut these businesses down. The state has this money. The state received $100 million in the settlement. Unfortunately, the lawyers took a good chunk of it. But what's the value of $100 million in 1994 compared to today? What was the cost of cleanup in 1994 compared to today? The state has an obligation to these businesses. We force them to, their insurance companies, to pay the state to take care of the cleanup problem. It is no longer the business's responsibility, it's the state's responsibility. Thank you. Representative Lagunias, take it, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be helpful for the committee at some point to hear how much the state has paid entirely to clean up for these landfills, because it is way beyond the $66 million that we got from insurance policies. But I don't know what that total number is, but it would be helpful if PCA at some date could provide that number.
I see heads nodding up there. Okay. With that, thank you. Representative Hanson, sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my question was for Mr. Kadelka. I don't know if PCA is coming back down later on. Are we wrapped up on this bill?
I'd like to be wrapped up because we do need to move on to the Lewick bill.
If I just, Mr. Yep. Kadelka.
Quickly, Commissioner. I'm a track coach. There you go. Good job.
Jump that hurdle.
Don't pull a hamstring.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kadelka, so I've watched over the last two or three years reading the paper, you know, as this story pops up in the media over and over again of negotiations close to a deal, maybe have a deal, oops, don't have a deal. I know you're involved in it. For PCA, how many people are involved? How does this get charged? Who's involved in this, and where do the funds come from of how much PCA has been involved? And I want to be clear, this is in all this process that takes time. And I think this, I'm just thinking about recent media of the last two or three years, it appears there's a lot of time that's been spent trying to get a deal. Where does that money come from?
Commissioner. Mr. Chair and committee members, there have been about 5 to 6 staff folks with the MPCA working on this, including the AG's office. And in terms of hours, the city, county, and state have spent hundreds of hours over the last 3 years on this effort. The state costs are covered by the closed landfill budget, which comes from the remediation fund, which is appropriated by the legislature.
Thank you.
And follow up. And Mr. Chair, maybe this is a question for you. It's my understanding you sent a letter last night to the commissioner of PCA about their budget. Is that something that could be provided to the committee? Or
I can.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be real quick. Just kind of wanted to point out, I don't know if there's a reason we don't name the individual who's actually responsible for this going on as long as it has. I'm assuming he's not Voldemort, but I just want to point out, ultimately, I just want to comment, it's really unfortunate that, you know, these businesses and we're having to spend all this time really because of one person. And so I just kind of wanted to get, because that really seems like that's the heart of it, is this one person is really kind of the problem. So just wanted to point out who it appears is the actual bad guy and why this is taking so long to get this cleaned up.
To be honest with you, I'm not sure I remember the actual name of the person, but...
You who shall not be named.
Okay. Okay, so with that, I'll renew my motion to lay House File 2212 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Thank you to all the people who testified today.
Why don't we find out for the bill?
Well, that's what I need.
All right, Representative Lewick. Yeah. Hey, people who are leaving, Representative Lewick has a bill up yet. Come on. Didn't he? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I would like to bring House File 1233 before the committee, and I believe that would be laid over for inclusion in an additional bill.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. First of all, you see there are a lot of folks who didn't get up and leave.
Quiet in the room, please. Take your conversations to the hallways.
No cattle guy.
I
wanted to recognize the folks that didn't leave that just showed up here a little while ago that got to see some of the things we work on, and those are folks that produce food for America's tables, and in fact some of the clearly the best beef in the United States and the world. This doesn't have anything to do with cattle, but it does have to do something with our school districts and funding education in Minnesota. 1233 simply would appropriate two sets of funding, $250,000 to continue work on school trust lands. We continue to grind through millions of acres of property that belongs to the kids in Minnesota, and our staff within the DNR is working on that. So that's the Section 6 of the bill. The first part, Section 2, is $500,000 that we would use to continue the long-standing process of rescuing some 83,000 to 86,000 acres of school trust land that is locked up in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area and since 1964 hasn't generated a nickel of funds for our schools. And I don't want to belabor the history. I've certainly got the history on this, Mr. Chair. It goes back 50-some years, just a deal that was never consummated with the federal government. We're moving forward as fast as we can on that. That $500,000 in the second portion of this bill is absolutely critical. Without that, we can't keep up with the federal government here on making sure that we're able to get those inholdings out either through purchase or through exchange so we can start using those resources to continue to fund our school districts. So with that, I certainly would be available for questions, and we can go into technical details if anybody so desires.
Okay, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick, thanks for bringing this bill. Have you had conversations with the three county boards that are largely involved with this school trust land issue as Lake St. Louis and Cook County?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not specifically in the last several weeks. I know there's concern and as to ultimately where this whole land exchange and purchase will go. I would note for the record we haven't exchanged an acre yet, and we've been working on it since 1964.
Hope that doesn't happen with the landfill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know
for one county board is actually on record saying they support this. I noticed some of the research, the Friends of the Boundary Waters are on record supporting this, but there's other groups that are fighting against it. They think we should have an acre-for-acre exchange. I just think we need to move this process forward because I agree with Bill Alter that we haven't gotten a dime from the school trust, 86,000 acres in 50 years or so. So it needs to be done.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. I've only been here 6+ years, and we've been wrestling with this issue, and there's people that have clogged this up severely, and we need to get that thing done. We need to get those dollars into the hands of our school districts and stuff and move forward. So anything else, members? Okay. Well, with that, renew the motion to have House File 1233 laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, members. And your school kids out there, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Governor Hanson.
So just, I wondered about, not on the bill, but on a roadmap ahead for the next week or two. Are we going to see a budget or?
Eventually, yeah. Yeah, right.
For all the agencies?
We certainly hope so. Okay, and we'll talk offline a little bit. Okay? Anything else, members? With that, we're adjourned.